Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Business Blitz on the Melting Pot Radio Network. I am your host, Daniel Trowick, along with my partner in progress, Ms. Danny Wright. Danny, how you feeling tonight?
Hey, man. I'm doing all right. It's back to being cold down here. I don't know what happened, but the bottom fell out. It was all nice and sunny yesterday. I was outside. Messed around and took a selfie, enjoying the sunshine, and left for work this morning, and it was all, you know, like 45 degrees. I went outside for lunch, and when I tell you it was so cold, my eyes were watering. I was like, this has got to stop. Why do I live somewhere where the air makes my face hurt? I'm
Danny,
just confused. And I keep doing it to myself, too. Like, I keep moving back to Ohio. So, you know, I'm not sure what's going on, but, you know, I don't know. I need one of those, the little robber's mask, you know, that covers your whole face.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. But I don't know. It might be a little dangerous wearing those nowadays. So you're living close to that lake air. When that water and that air get together and do that lake stuff up there, the Great Lakes,
oh,
man,
yeah.
I know. You need to come back to Philly. Yeah, that's all.
I know,
you just
right?
need to come home, Danny.
Yeah, but y'all have 86.5 inches of snow, so, I mean, I don't know if I want to be there either right now.
yeah, I understand. I'm so happy. School is back in session tomorrow.
I
am absolutely tired of snow days. I've been stuck in the house, cabin fever with six kids, and I'm just ready. I don't want to see them no more. I just don't want to see them. I just want to send them out. If they make one announcement and say school is delayed or closed, I'm sending them anyway. They're going to be standing in the schoolyard when school opens.
And you will be in jail. You'll be in jail.
No, I won't.
Child endangerment. Yes, you will.
No, I didn't get the message, Danny. I didn't get the message. I thought school was a normal time. I just sent them. I mean, what? I can't get in trouble for that. I cannot. I will not.
Really?
Nope. But,
I know.
It's cold. It's snowy. You know, we only, I think the official numbers that I saw last, you know, every different weather station, they judge it differently. I heard 24. I heard 22.4. I don't know. We just got like 2 feet of snow. And, yeah, that's all that matters. school's been closed. I don't want to talk about snow no more. But since we're talking about Philly, we have an amazing guest on the air for you guys tonight. Trust me, this is going to be a blessing to you. And we are talking about something that's passionate for me, something that is one of my greatest passions, and that's HIV and AIDS awareness. And, you know, I'm just ready. I think we need to bring her on now. So coming live to Business Blitz on this beautiful Tuesday evening is Miss Andrea Walker, the founder of iRock, also an author and just a great, amazing woman. Andrea, welcome to Business Blitz.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on this evening.
Welcome to the show. I feel like singing, I want to rock, I want to rock, I want to rock right now. But that's clearly way off from your organization,
yes.
So I'm sorry. I
yes.
have ADD. Stuff just kicks in at random moments. So, but welcome, welcome. I'm going to be professional Danny tonight. No silly Danny. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining
Danny.
Us tonight. No, I'm just playing. No, but seriously, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. And we're just excited. I'm excited to talk to you and hear about the work that you're doing. So I'm ready to get the show on the road, Daniel. Let's go.
All right, all right. Now, Andrea, we are kindred spirits, each and every one of us. Danny was born here in Philly, but she left. She's corny. And yeah. So we stuck around. We stuck around. And, you know, I want to ask you, you know, about your organization, iRock, and, you know, where the idea of it came from, where it all started.
Excuse me. iRock started about 3 years ago. That's when I started really putting action into my dreams and my thoughts. A little bit about myself is that when I was 10, my mother was diagnosed with HIV. And from there, it kind of, something was planted in me once I really learned what HIV was. She did ultimately pass away on my son's second birthday. And since then, I've been an advocate for HIV and AIDS, especially in the African-American community. I've been a voice in the schools for our youth, advocating on their behalf to get testing, to receive free testing and education, as well as counseling and different resources on their behalf. So about 3 years ago, I found myself sitting at my dining room table trying to figure out which way life was going to take me. And I knew that getting up every day, going to work on someone else's dream just wasn't what I wanted to do. So I had this great idea that for a National HIV Testing Day that I wanted to test 100 youth. And I thought about where could I do this at? You know, the schools weren't going to just allow me to come in and test their children, even though they should. They weren't. So I kind of felt like I wanted to get to an open area where I could reach as many youth as I possibly could. And because National HIV Testing Day is in the summertime, you know, school is out anyway. So where are kids at in the summer? They're out and about. They're up and down the streets. So I decided Broad Street would be the busiest area, and then I chose the Liacourt Center, and I contacted them. I partnered with the Mazzani Center and a few other organizations here in Philadelphia, and we tested 100 youth on Broad Street. That was the beginning of our Know Your Status campaign. That was the beginning of iRock, and it's manifested. What we basically do at iRock is, and just in case you guys don't know, iRock stands for Intelligently Redefining Our Culture. And it kind of just ties in with going into the school systems and reevaluating the way our children think. So that's what iRock basically stands for. But we basically provide resources to the urban community. And when we say resources, not just HIV and AIDS resources, but any type of resource that you could possibly think of that our communities may be lacking, from financial literacy to high school and college prep, to financial aid assistance, to scholarship assistance, grant assistance. We do nonprofit startups, small business thrown up. You name it, and we do it. We have the resource for you.
Awesome. Wow. Awesome. That's really awesome. That's really, really awesome. I just think it's great how, you know, things come together. Now, do you have any partners with you in the business, or are you running kind of a one-woman shop?
I have a board of directors. I'm actually growing my board of directors right now. We're up to about 9 people that sit on my board. But other than that, it's just myself and my board, and I've just been running things for the past 3 years.
Okay. Awesome. So is IROC an official nonprofit organization?
We are an official 501c3 accredited nonprofit organization.
That's awesome. So talk a little bit about even that process and you know, did you run into any difficulties with getting it set up? And I just because this is the business show, and I want people to understand, you can't just start a nonprofit.
I get that a lot, so I definitely understand. That's one of the resources that we actually do provide, because people think just because they say, like, I want to run a nonprofit, and they put a title and they say that they're a nonprofit, that they are a nonprofit, and that does not qualify you to be a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that when I first started, IROC, I reached out to a young lady who is from, I think she's from Texas, and she had sent me all this information on the business that she runs, which is to start nonprofits and get all your paperwork and everything and blah, blah, blah. And it was a lot of mm-hmm. information. And when she sent me her fee for $1,500, I was like, what? And she was like, you know, it's $1,500, and on top of that, you're going to have to pay $400 for the IRS and $125 for your incorporation. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm up to $2,000 on a nonprofit, and I didn't make a dime, and I don't even know when I'm going to make, if I'm going to make anything. So, you know, that was a lot of money for me. So I started researching, and at that time, I was in school for nonprofiting. So my major was organizational leadership in nonprofiting. So I started, mm-hmm. you know, just doing research on my own, talking to my teachers and the individuals in my classes. A lot of them worked for large nonprofits here in Philadelphia. The internet was my best friend. Google was like my right hand. And I went ahead and I did my whole process of filing my 501c3, which is my 1023, getting incorporated, getting my EIN number, in addition to getting an LLC, because we are an LLC as well as a nonprofit. And I did all of that in less than 60 days.
Wow.
That's amazing. Now, talk a little bit about that, because I personally did not know that you could be a 501c3 and an LLC. You know, what's the whole process regarding that?
A nonprofit organization, when people think of nonprofit organizations, they automatically think of organizations who do not get any type of profit. You know, you think nonprofit, you're not making any money. And that is not true. Think of the YMCA for an example. And I like to use this one as an example with my clients because it's the easiest, because everyone knows what the YMCA is. But you go to the YMCA and you say, I want to sign a program for my daughter dance class, or I want to sign up for your swim team or whatever. And they say, well, in order to mm-hmm. do that, you need to sign up for one of our membership packages, and it's going to cost you $100-something a month. Okay,
mm-hmm.
well, the YMCA is a nonprofit organization, but they have services. They provide the community with different services. These services range from daycare to membership options to after-school programs, and you pay for them. That's what you pay
mm-hmm.
for. They provide a service and you pay for them. So when you become a nonprofit, that's how you can be a nonprofit. If you are providing a service, you will basically split down the middle that you're one half nonprofit and one half a for profit, which is a LLC. So it does not mean that you are no longer a nonprofit. It just means that your nonprofit has a service and sells a service, whatever that service is. For me, my service is that, you know, I have a book. So I basically wrote my book into it. So the way I wrote my book into it is that I give my books away to the schools of Philadelphia for free.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say for free. Let me retract that. I give my books to the children for free, but the school will pay for them. So that's a service. I'll go in and I'll teach a class, either journaling or I'll teach a woman's of honor class. So I'll teach a course or some type of segment or something like that. That's a service that they pay me for, so I have to have an LLC that will cover me. You know what I'm saying? Because even though that's under my nonprofit, it's still a sold service.
Awesome.
Well, I hope you guys understood that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And I, for those of the of you that are listening in tonight, we do have Andrea Walker of IROC, and if you have missed any of the valuable information that she has already dropped in the first 15 minutes of the show, fret not. You can go back and listen to the recording of our show at any time forever by visiting blogtalkradio.com/ Melting Pot Radio Network. So, I mean, this is just such good information. And, you know, as Daniel and I move forward in our businesses and our endeavors and wanting to start nonprofits, it's very important that people understand the intricacies of just being an entrepreneur, but especially running a nonprofit, because there are so many other steps that nonprofits are held accountable for than a just a regular, you know, for-profit, what's considered a for-profit organization. So,
yes, yes, indeed. I learned so much in the first, you know, 15 minutes of this show for myself, because I just started my nonprofit along with other nonprofits that I'm a part of, and I really learned a lot just now. But I want to go back a little bit, you know, from when you were saying how you came up with IROC and the situation as far as your mother, you know, being diagnosed with HIV and passing on your son's second birthday, you said?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely tough. I, too, you know, my father was diagnosed with HIV. I don't know when. Honestly, he never told me when. He never told me how. He never told me anything of it. He was a very private man. But, you know, he passed away in 2013 due to complications of HIV. And, you know, so we're kindred spirit here. And, you know, that's a deep place to be. Now, you know, when you were going through all of that, you know, how was it? Was it really hard for you? Were you prepared? Did you educate yourself more on HIV and AIDS? How did that whole process go for you?
Well, you know, I was 10. My mom told me, you know, she expressed to myself and my sister that she was HIV when I was just 10. So I didn't know what it was then. She didn't explain it to me. She didn't go into detail. And you know, in all honesty, she kind of just said, you know, mommy's going to die and I have HIV. And that was the end of the conversation.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was heavy, you know. I didn't even know what she was talking about. And in my head, I kind of just was like, all right, well, she's going to go to the doctor, get some medicine. You know, she ain't going to, like, really die. But my mom was young, was a very, you know, she was a young mom. She was teen mom. So she looked young. And as I got older, I started hearing the negative stigmas that's associated with people who have HIV or AIDS. And, you know, they would say, like, you could tell when someone had what they called the monkey on their back by looking at their skin, and they would have lesions and this and that. And I used to be like, yeah, somebody must have misdiagnosed my mom, because my mom looked like she's 15. People think we twins. You know, she don't look sick. She don't act sick. I never seen her sick. You know, she gets up and she's always on the go. And then when I turned 17, I honestly feel like it was God, because to graduate high school at that time, they had just implemented what they called a senior project. So you had to do this really large project, get up and present in front of, like, your whole 12th grade class, and it was assigned to you. And it was like a big deal, because this was the first year that Philadelphia schools had implemented this. And I was assigned healthcare. And under healthcare, they had about four topics, like diabetes, cancer, HIV and AIDS, and like one more thing. But ironically, I was assigned HIV and AIDS. And
wow.
I remember trying to figure out, like, you know, doing a research on a computer. This was before computers was like all popular and everything, you know. So I was trying to figure out information. And I remember getting an encyclopedia, trying to, like, look in encyclopedia for what HIV and AIDS was, because I couldn't go to my mom. My family had no clue. It was a secret. None of us talked about it. Nobody mentioned it. It was something that nobody was supposed to, you know, really talk about in my family. But here I was needing information to do this project. And I got so frustrated, you know, the information that I did get off the line and I did research, it didn't really make sense because they were saying that this was a gay man's disease. And I'm like, well, that ain't my mom. And then they would, you know, other sites would, you know, so confuse me. So then other sites would be like, okay, it's for people who do drugs and they shoot up. And, you know, I'm like, okay, so I guess my mom must do drugs. I mean, I didn't understand. But I say all this to say that I went to school, and on my poster board, I wrote, my mom is HIV positive. It stunned my whole class. Everybody was just floored, teacher, everybody. And from there, I made a vow to learn what HIV and AIDS was, because I felt very stupid at that point, very uneducated. My teachers could not talk to me or tell me, or, you know, they didn't know what to say to me. And I felt like everybody else in the class knew what diabetes was, they knew what cancer was, they knew what lupus was, they knew what all this other stuff was, but nobody couldn't tell me what HIV or AIDS was. And it was at that point that I realized that, you know, we come to school and we teach our kids so much. Our kids are at school more than they are at home. Why are we not educating our kids on what HIV and AIDS is when they spend most of their time in school, when most of our children are sexually active before the ages of 16 years of age, when they say that the statistics in the African-American community are that of Sub-Sahara desert, you know, the numbers that are over there in Africa. Why are we not teaching our children this? So that's kind of like how I came to be, because I wanted to be that voice. I wanted to, you know, educate our youth in school. I didn't want them to have to grow up like me, not knowing, you know, being sexually active and not knowing what risk I was putting myself at, not knowing that this deadly disease was in my family and I didn't even know what it was going to do to myself or my family or anyone.
Wow.
So what were some of the steps that you took to really educate yourself about the disease? I know because you were young, and so obviously getting that news was probably confusing, but as you got older, what are some of the things that you've done to continually just stay up to date and so that you can, because obviously what you do is advocacy and raising awareness. So talk about how you remain educated so that you can educate others.
At that time, the first thing I did was I got accepted to college, and I went away on a school, went away on a full scholarship. And I said that, you know, I wanted to become a nurse at that time because I wanted to not just educate myself about HIV and AIDS, but I became really paranoid about healthcare as a whole and different things that could affect me as a woman and, you know, as a black woman. So I felt like if I went into healthcare, then I would constantly be learning. I quickly realized that nursing was not for me. So once I did stay in healthcare for 10 years, but I didn't do nursing at all. And I guess my career in healthcare allowed me to stay very close to different things that were manifesting behind the scenes as far as just the different testings, the numbers, the statistics and things like that that was going on behind the scenes. But as far as up front, I'm involved in a lot of panel discussions, a lot of trials that go on, a lot of research within Children's Hospital, which is my employer. So I do a lot of, like, studying behind the scenes with the research and the numbers. So I'm really, like, indulged in what's going on with the numbers and how is that affecting my community, how is that affecting other black women who look like me. I also went ahead and started volunteering downtown at the Mazzani Center where my mom was a patient at for 10 years. I got involved with Planned Parenthood. I did an internship at Planned Parenthood. for about a year because I wanted to see firsthand how my peers were dealing with certain things that directly and indirectly related to HIV, such as like unprotected sex. I wanted to know what the numbers was. The abortion rate, I wanted to know what the numbers were. I wanted to know if when these teens were coming in for abortions, were they being tested for HIV? And like I said, I worked in healthcare for 10 years. I worked in OBGYN for 5. So that's how I continuously educated myself at that time. Now I'm more so, again, I'm back in school. I'm in grad school, and I'm just taking different classes on HIV and AIDS and the supposedly the epidemic and how it's no longer an epidemic, but it's, to me, it really is still.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And now with me also being in the HIV and AIDS field, you know, we've come across plenty of medical professionals who really don't know about HIV. Now, I want to ask you, since I just found out that you, you know, work with CHOP and you're behind the scenes with a bunch of different things, how can we further educate our medical professionals, our doctors, our nurses, to, you know, get them to understand not just the medical side of HIV and AIDS, but more so the personal aspect and how it actually affects people? What can we do to get more education out regarding those different aspects?
See, that's, you know, that's an interesting question. The thing that I find about anything that is as large as HIV and AIDS is it's never real until it hits home. That's diabetes, that's cancer, that's lupus. It's never real until it hits home. So one of the things that I do is a lot at my at CHOP. Every panel discussion, every time there's an opportunity for me to share my story, and people are moved because we work together, and it, you know, what I get from them is, oh my God, I would have never, oh my God, I would have never thought that happened to you, or how do you deal with something like that, or oh my God, you don't look like you came from that, you know, type of situation, or oh my God, I'm so, you know, so I think that as far as healthcare professionals, them being more exposed to the reality of the situation, whether it's putting them, you know, in these different communities to see firsthand the effects that it's having, or, you know, bringing it to them. I had a young lady that was HIV positive, 22 years old, who volunteered with us for about a year and a half, who just wanted to share her story. And, you know, she followed me around to every event that I did, every speaking engagement that I did. And I used to do this thing where I would tell everybody, and, you know, I would say, raise your hand if you know someone that's HIV positive and keep your hand raised. And then I would say, raise your hand if, you know, somebody in your family or close to you is HIV positive and keep your hands raised. And, you know, it would hardly be anybody with their hands raised. And then I would say, raise your hand if you're HIV or AIDS positive. And this young girl would raise her hand, and it would just floor everybody. Everybody would be floored every single time. They just couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
That's wild.
So talk about some of the, I'm always interested in advocacy groups, and what they do and the impact they make. So do you have, and obviously we don't want you to mention names unless you have permission, but tell us about a success story, if you want to call it that, or just some of the impact that what you do has had on the community, whether it be, you know, someone who decided to get tested, or, you know, any kind of impact that you've made, maybe someone that was dealing with the loss of a loved one.
So what I do is I don't usually carry cards around with me because they would have my email address that goes to IROC, and I don't usually – I monitor it, but I also have my VP monitor it and my interns monitor it. So what I did was I set up a personal email address, and it's just, and I have these cards, and it just has my name on the front, and it has this email address on the back of it. To give out my phone number, but that became a little overwhelming. So now I set up this email. And one time I, you know, I go to schools. That's what I do. I go to different schools, and I speak to children, and I tell them my story. And I went to a school, and I gave out 10 cards. I remember only had 10 cards, and I gave them all out. And I started getting, you know, emails. Just saying, you know, thank you, Miss Andrea, for sharing your story. And those were just like typical emails. But then I got an email from this one person who said, can I just ask you a quick question? Listening to your story, so, you know, I felt moved, and, you know, the young lady told me that she was sexually active. She's 14 years old. The guy that she's dealing with is in his upper 20s, and, you know, she says he never wants to use protection, and after hearing my story and me telling her how she could contract HIV, the different ways that she could contract HIV, she says, I was thinking that maybe I should switch to just doing oral sex with him. Do you think that will help me prevent HIV? So, wow. I was just, like, heartbroken. I was heartbroken. So, I told her, I gave her my phone number. I said, can you, you know, call me? I want to talk to you. So, she called me. And she says, before you say anything, I already know he's too old for me, da-da-da. And I'm like, you know, I'm not even at that part. Like, I didn't even get there yet. I just want to back up and answer your question that you asked. So, I told her. And, you know, I told her, I said, you know, you can still get HIV or AIDS through oral sex. So, you know, I wanted to be clear with her. And in speaking with her, I realized this is a 14-year-old little girl. I have a 14-year-old in my house, and she keeps the Barbie doll. So it really was just, like, throwing me off that I was having this conversation with this 14-year-old little girl. I wound up meeting with her at her school a few days later because I wanted to see her face. I wanted to put a face to the person that I was talking to, and I wanted to kind of see if I could stay connected with her. So I went to the school. She told me to meet her at the school. I went to the school. She was not there that day, and I talked to the teacher, and I said, you know, I'm here because I wanted to meet her. She asked me to meet her here. So the teacher disclosed to me that the mom had called and said that she wouldn't be returning back to school, that she was pregnant and that her mom was having her placed in foster care.
Oh, wow.
So then I had to go through the system. I went through systems and the chains and all of this with DHS just trying to find this little girl. And thank God for connection. And, you know, I had a few connections down there, and they located this little girl for me. And, you know, I went to go see her down in the foster care. She was in a group home, so I went to go see her, and I talked to her. And they allowed me to take her to get, she had took a Plan B or something like that, and she was no longer going to be with child. So they allowed me to go with her and take her to the doctors and get tested and get her on birth control after that. So I started building a relationship with her. And, you know, over about 3 or 4 months' time, she stopped seeing this guy, and she got back into school. And she's doing really well. And I still speak with her every now and again. But I feel like that's, like, one of my best, like, you know, stories because I followed her. Like, it's been a year now. So that's one of the longest situations that I've had to follow from the start to, you know, now. And I just always feel like, you know, God places you in certain people's lives for certain reasons. You never know why you're going to connect with someone. You never know the reason that you're talking to that person, what they're getting out of it, or what God has in plan for you to do in their life. And it could have been so easy for me not to respond to the email. It could have been so easy for me to say that's none of my business. It could have been so easy for me to say, oh, well, she in foster care now. But I just felt like, you know what, this too many people done gave up on this child already. She is 14 years old. She has a whole life ahead of her, and all she needs is one person to really care about her. That's it. And I ever since I met that young girl, I always, when I speak at different speaking engagements, I tell people, IROC is in the business of saving lives, and we could save your child's life.
Yes. That is so deep. That is extremely deep. And, I mean, with me, I'm a father of two 16-year-old girls, so that really hits home for me. And my oldest is about to be 17, and she's a junior in high school, and that sounds crazy coming out of my mouth, but it's the reality that I'm living in. So that is really, really deep. And it seems like Andrea, when we get older, you know, we get corny and old and stuff, and you hear a 14, 15-year-old being sexually active, and it's like, oh, my gosh, they're so young. But then you think back, like, wow, when I was in freshman in high school, everybody was talking about it, and most of the people I knew were doing it. So it's like, it's crazy, but it just seems so young, and it just really hits home, especially when your kids get that old. And whew, man, I'm feeling some type of way right now. I'm not even going to lie. But, you know, real quick, we're going to take a quick commercial break and be right back with Andrea Walker. We are back on Business Blitz on the Melting Pot Radio Network. As you know, we have a wonderful lineup of shows. Monday, Danny and I host Spit Game, our sports talk show. Tuesday nights, which is tonight, we have Business Blitz, our business and entrepreneurship show, both shows airing at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Wednesday, we have our Christian talk show, Commissioned by Submission, which airs at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Saturday, we have The Show with Big TJ and Monty, the Sportologist. Their sports talk show, they bring it real, raw, uncut, Christianly sports talk at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on Sunday nights, we have No Box Thinking Radio with Jonathan Kegler, which airs at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are also working on a couple new shows to bring to the network that we shall be announcing soon. So definitely stay tuned for that. Danny?
Yes, yes, yes. Definitely excited about the current shows that we have and those that are upcoming. So in order to stay up to date, obviously you're listening to this show, so you have our phone number, or you're listening online. So a few things to keep up to date and in the know with the Melting Pot Radio Network. If you've called in and you're listening to the show live via phone, make sure you go back and check us out on Blog Talk Radio's website. Our direct link is www.blogtalkradio.com/Melting Pot Radio Network, all together. Also, be sure that you follow us on Twitter at MeltingPotRN, like our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheMeltingPotRadioNetwork, and our email address for anyone that would like to book someone for the show, or you feel that you want to be booked, you want to be on any one of our shows, be it a sports show or one of the shows on Sunday night with Jonathan Kegler, any of our shows, please email us, meltingpotradionetwork@gmail.com.
Awesome, awesome. We are back with Andrea Walker on Business Blitz. And I want to come back now and jump into your book, Miss Author Lady, A Beautiful Struggle. Can you tell us about your book, A Beautiful Struggle?
Sure. Yes, my book, A Beautiful Struggle, is loosely based on my life, growing up with a mother that is HIV positive. And I began writing that when I was about 14. It wasn't something that I set out to write. It was actually just journals, a lot of journals. And when I told you when I was 17 and I really found out what HIV was, I started, you know, thinking, like, this really could, you know, touch some young girl's life. And, you know, I sent it out to a few publishing companies, and I think I got tons and tons and tons of rejection letters. And I just was like, oh, okay. And I went away to college, and I came back, and I remember, you know, thinking again, like, I think that this story could touch somebody's life. It really could help someone. And, you know, still got more rejection letters. Fast forward so many years later, once I got IROC up and running, I felt like it could be a great tool to use to help some of the youth that, you know, I deal with on a day-to-day basis. Because sometimes when you talk to youth, you know, being an adult, you know, youth always, they always feel like, oh, you old, you don't know what you're talking about. Or, you know, like you ain't been there or done that with them. And I wanted to make sure that when I have these conversations with these teenagers and with our youth, that they understand that everything that they are doing, that they are going through, I've been there, I've done that. And I've got proof, you know, my story, I inked it, you know, at the same age that you guys are right now, that's when I started writing, you know, my story. So I started writing at 14, I was done writing it by the time I was 17 and went away to college. And everything that you're going through, I've been there and I've done it. But this is how I did it. This is how I survived it. And, you know, I talk about the different issues that plagued me as a teen growing up in Philadelphia. I was born to a drug addicted mother and a drunken father. I, you know, lived in multiple houses in high school. I probably moved about 12 times in high school, and I attended four high schools in a 4-year span. But I graduated at the top of my class, and I got a full ride to college. I was the first person in my family to graduate high school and go to college. And I talk about all these different things in the book and all the obstacles I faced, and in addition to my mom being HIV positive and not knowing how to cope. I talk about all the negative things I did to cope and how I really started to turn my life around once I got that acceptance letter to college.
Wow. Now, where did you go to college?
So I originally went to Delaware State. I got a full ride to Delaware State for nursing. And about, I don't even say a month. I don't even want to say it was a month. I want to say maybe 3 weeks and 2 days into being away at college, I got a phone call from DHS telling me that my sister's children were being taken into custody and that someone needed to come and get them. So I dropped out of college and I came home and I raised my sister's children.
Wow. Wow. So did you ever go back and finish your degree for any?
I did. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I'm in grad school now. I currently have a bachelor's degree in organizational leadership, and I am finishing up my master's in nonprofit.
Awesome. Now, excuse me, what, how can I ask this? I have so many questions going through my head, and I, you know, I know we're short on time, but talk about, as you wrote the book, did you find yourself having a sense of healing? Was it, because I know there are times when you start to write things out and you it becomes a healing process for you. Did you find that as you wrote the book?
When I initially wrote the book, like I said, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to write a book about my life. It was like, today is January 26th, and I went to school, and X, Y, and Z happened. And I came home, and my bags were sitting on a curb, and I didn't have anywhere to live, and I went to stay with my girl. You know, so it was like that. It wasn't ever a thought like, I'm going to write a book. When I started editing my book a year and a half ago is when it hit me. That's when I started going through the healing process. Editing my book was one of the hardest things I had to do. I didn't even have to go to counseling anymore because the healing started all on its own. And when I read it, when I reread my book, that's why I say my book is loosely based on my life, because when I reread it, there were things that were in there that I didn't even know that I had wrote, and things that, you know, feelings that I had at 14 that I no longer have now at 32. Ways that I looked at things when I was 14 and 15 that I no longer look at those things. So I needed to edit those things because, you know, and this is why I feel like, you know, I am like one of the best people to speak to teens, because I can really, really relate to them from that perspective. You know, when you're a teenager, you see things kind of just from your space, from being 14, 15. Mm-hmm. You can't predict how you're going to feel at 32 or 33. But, you know, rereading those feelings, I'm like, oh, wow, you know, I can't believe that I felt like, you know, my dad didn't love me, or I can't believe that I felt like, you know, whatever. Because now, as an adult, I see things totally different. I get the bigger picture. It's like when you're a teenager, you're a little self-centered, and it's all about me, 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 me. You don't get that your family is taking care of 25 other kids. You just get that you didn't get, you know, a jacket for Christmas. So, you know, so the healing process for me began about a year and a half ago when I did the editing of my book. And like I said, it was the hardest thing. I quit at least 100 times. I quit the process, and I said, I'm not putting this book out. I can't do it. And it was painful, and it brought up a lot of feelings that I didn't even know I had. And it was like snatching a Band-Aid off of an open wound, and the blood was gushing out everywhere. And the only thing that made it stop was completing it, was when I was done. I was so relieved when I was done. It was, you know, it wasn't even funny. Like, I just was like, thank God I was able to complete this. And I don't care whatever happens from here on out. I don't care. I'm just glad I'm done.
Yes, wow. Yes. Now, this is a Christian network, and, you know, one of the things that we live by on the Melting Pot Radio Network is transparency has the ability to change lives. And, you know, your transparency, you sharing your life, and it's going to help someone. And I know I can sense your spirit. You have that spirit where if you can just touch one person with your book, you're satisfied. But you're going to touch hundreds, thousands, millions. And, you know, just because of the things that you went through, and, you know, listening to the fact when you went back and were rereading the things that you were feeling at the time when you were 14, 15 years old, I can really understand, you know, why you are so confident in your ability to reach the youth. Because, you know, going back and reading it, I know certain things that I felt when I was 14 years old that I know darn well is ludicrous right now. But, you know, at that age, being young and just feeling the ways that you were feeling, and rereading that and filling it all over, and, you know, it's power in words, and you can read a story and it will take you there. And when you're reading your own story on your own life and it's taking you back to that place, I can only imagine, you know, the ways that you felt. And, you know, you were saying you quit throughout the process and it was just too much of a struggle to do it. You know, while you were going through that, what did you do to help you get through that? To get through editing your book and getting it out?
At the time, I had surrounded myself with people who believed in me more than I believed in myself. I will say that you know, putting out my book was, it was a task in and of itself. I lost friends. My family isolated me and turned their backs on me. And I think that was the hardest part for me because I felt so alone. But the people that were working with me on this project, they believed in me so much. It was unbelievable. And they wouldn't let me quit. No matter how many days I said, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm not picking up this anymore, I'm not editing another thing, I'm not reading it again, I don't want to. My editor, I had never met my editor face-to-face. She's in New York. And she was like, Andrea, I'm going to keep sending you pages. I'm going to keep working on this. I'm not going to just let you just say, no, you don't want to do this. Like, your book is so powerful. My manager, you know, he used to use, like, tough love. Like, oh, so you're just going to be a quitter? You want to let, you know, everybody defeat you? You want to let the devil come in and instill this from you? You went through all this. For what? What's the outcome, you know? So, and just surrounding myself with those people, I think, was the best thing God could have ever did, because these people actually just came out of nowhere. I didn't, like I said, I never met my editor, and she read my book one day, and she believed in me, and we've been friends ever since. Never even met her face-to-face. My manager, he read a synopsis of my story. We had a conversation about some things, and he's been on board ever since, and we've become such great friends. And he's like, you know, I don't care what you do or what you say, you have to get your story out there. So many people, you know, rallied for me when I felt like I had nobody.
Hmm. Wow. Whew. I'm just sitting here, I'm like literally just speechless with some of the things that you're talking about, and it's just so rich and so necessary. So I definitely appreciate your transparency and just just how you have allowed people into your life and to give them a tidbit of why you do what you do. So thank you for that. Thank you so, so much for that. As we end every show, we always ask our guests a couple of things. First, shout out your, we need your information. We want to know your information, your social media information. How can people contact you?
Okay, so I'm on all platforms at I Am Andrea Walker. So that's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. My own personal website is IamAndreaWalker.com. And that's where I can be found at.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. So, as we end, we always ask our entrepreneurs two questions. What advice do you have for current or aspiring entrepreneurs, your best advice for them as they run their business? And then secondly, what is your favorite quote? What is the quote that you just, it's your go-to, your motivator?
So advice that I would give entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs is that there's no such thing as overnight success. While you may see people, it may seem like you don't know who a person is today, and then all of a sudden tomorrow they're all famous and big. That is not true. You just didn't see their struggle. Unlike them, I used my struggle as my platform. So I would say just keep pushing, keep grinding, no matter how many days or how many nights you feel like you're not going anywhere. Every day that you wake up is a blessing in and of itself. And if you don't start today, 1 year from today, you'll look back and wish you did start today. And my go-to quote is Matthew 19:26, with God all things are possible.
Amen. Now you gave out your information where people can find you. What about your information where people can find your book, A Beautiful Struggle?
So my book is on Amazon. It's available on Amazon. in hardback and in Kindle, for the Kindle edition. It's also on my website, IamAndreaWalker.com. And it's also going to be available if you're in the Philadelphia area. I'm having a Meet the Author book signing this coming Sunday at Mignon Brewery from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. where I'll have books available, and I'll be personally signing every single book. We'll be broadcasting live from there as well. So if you want to get a hardback, personalized photograph copy, then that's where they will be at.
Awesome.
Well, Andrea, thank you so, so much for joining us tonight. Just amazing what you're doing. So we appreciate you. We appreciate the passion behind what you do. And I thank you so much for joining us this evening and sharing with us everything that you're doing and just the ministry that you have. So we appreciate you for that. We hope to have you back on the show, and we're excited to hear about some of the other activities and endeavors that you have coming up. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you,
well,
Andrea.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, right, Danny? Excuse me. Andrea, thank you again for, you know, coming on and taking your time out tonight to join us on Business Blitz and, you know, being transparent with our listeners that, you know, are looking into being an entrepreneur, who are an entrepreneur now, knowing the ins and outs, the information that you gave, the struggles behind it, and also those who are dealing with, you know, HIV and AIDS themselves, or a family member that's dealing with it and just trying to find an outlet. I thank you for being that outlet, and I truly appreciate it. And I'm happy we finally got to talk. It's been a struggle, but it's been a blessing. Thank you so much, Andrea.
Thank you. Thank you.
Danny.
Awesome. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening in to tonight's show. This is Business Blitz. I am Danny Wright, and he is Daniel Trawick. We are the founders and hosts of Business Blitz. We are also the hosts of Monday Night Show Spit Game, which airs at 8 p.m., and Commission by Submission, which airs every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Be sure that you check us out, communicate with us, email us, meltingpotradionetwork@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, type in the search bar, The Melting Pot Radio Network, or go straight to our link, facebook.com/The Melting Pot Radio Network. Find us on Twitter at Melting Pot RN. Again, Melting Pot RN. And check out our previous shows by visiting blogtalkradio.com/Melting Pot Radio Network. Until next time, stay cool. Actually, nowadays, stay warm.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Out there. Stay warm. Thank you so much for your support. We will talk to you guys really soon. Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful evening. Good night.
Good night.